glass and left corner to Aguilla. Aguilla the left circle. Passing to Yell. A shot saved. Made by Aguilla. Rebound. Another shot. They score! The Flames win it! Yeah, baby!
They score!
And the sea of red erupts.
Flames Talk starts now on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Here's Pat Steinberg and Wes Gilbertson.
All right, this hour's underway on a Thursday, March 16th. Hopefully you're doing well. Coming at you from our Doug Lacey's Basement Systems downtown studio, it's Post Media's Wes Gilbertson. My name is Pat Steinberg. Flames Talk available on Apple, Spotify, Google, Amazon, or wherever you get your podcast. Remember that, Wes. Where you can get those podcasts. Never forget that.
I will never forget it, buddy.
I have made sure of that.
Speaking of forgetful, if I seem a little distracted, I'm just over here doing a little research on the Flames record in Las Vegas. Is it okay?
Yeah, it hasn't been great. If you're trying to remember that first win, don't beat yourself up too much. Well, that's mean. I was going to try to start the show off on a positive note. Here, I am going to try. I am going to try to start it off positively on this hour of Flames Talk. So here we are, 14 games remaining. Tough game against Vegas on Thursday night. So here is my positive spin. See if you buy it on the text line. See if you buy it if your name's Wes. So if the Flames go in and beat Vegas at T-Mobile Arena, pick up their first ever win on the road against the Golden Knights, we're talking about a group that would be 4-1-1 in their last six games, and that would be a pace that keeps them relevant. 4-1-1 over a six-game span, that's kind of the pace that we're talking about them needing to have if they're going to make this thing interesting. So they win those two road games, they come home, lose against Anaheim, then they beat up on Ottawa, lose in overtime to the Arizona Coyotes. All of a sudden, that point against the Coyotes feels a whole lot more important if you go out and beat Vegas on Thursday night. That would get you to 4-1-1. That would get you to, what, 10 of a possible 12 points or 9 of a possible 12 points over a span of six games. I think that would be a positive little run, and you could punctuate it, put an exclamation point on it with your first ever win on the road in Vegas. So that is my positive spin to kick off this hour.
I'm impressed and delivered with a straight face, no less, especially the part where you said that point in Arizona would feel a little bit better.
I think it would. All of a sudden you're like, oh, we battled back and got that point in Arizona. Couldn't beat the mighty Coyotes, but we were able to get that point.
Yeah, you know what? I get where you're coming from, and I think
I'm trying. I'm doing my best.
Yeah, there's a lot to like about that point. It's just the pickle that the Flames have put themselves in is struggling to remain relevant in the playoff race. Just feels so hollow compared to, quite frankly, where and I'm not even going back to the start of the season. I'm not even saying where we thought they should be in September, but just, this is a team that we've heard talk for the past month about must-win games and urgency, and I've just seen too many duds. And so, yes, there would be a lot of positives. If you could go in and beat the Golden Knights tonight, you could finally get off the schneid at T-Mobile Arena, which moving forward would be, I think, significant. But in terms of how I might view the road trip, it would still be a very mixed bag.
Agreed. And I mean, objectively, yes. And beating Vegas would be great. Absolutely. And maybe that could be something that they could build on going back for a one-game homestand and then back on the road for two. I mean, we've been talking about Calgary's relatively easy schedule. They've got Vegas, Dallas, Los Angeles as their next three, and then Anaheim after that. These are three difficult games, and we do know that Calgary has seemingly been able to play better. I mean, you go back to the last time they played in Vegas less than a month ago, played a pretty good game. I know that it didn't end the way that they wanted, that ended with them coughing up a two-goal lead and eventually losing in overtime, but
First point in Sin City.
They're now 0-7-1.
Progress.
They've got one of a possible 16 points, opposed to 0 of 14. That's better than it was. So I guess they do seem to play better against good teams. And right now, the Vegas Golden Knights are the best team in the Western Conference. And this guy, Jonathan Quick, is playing like it's 2011 again. So I would not be surprised, I guess, if the Flames went out and put one of their better efforts recently on the table. Because the Ottawa game, the Flames were fine, but Ottawa was so dreadful, it was really tough to figure out exactly how good the Flames were that night.
Right.
I think if we were to come out of this game and be like, damn, the Flames played well in a one-goal game either way, but the Flames played really well, wouldn't surprise me at all. It's almost what I'm expecting going into this one.
Well, and this is the real challenge, I think, for those of us who cover the team, for those who cheer for the team at home, you know, people who might be listening. This is the rub. You expect the Calgary Flames to come out and deliver a really competitive, spirited effort tonight against the best team in the Western Conference. And we've seen that when this Calgary Flames team plays the way they're capable of, when they stick to that structure that they're capable of, when they get the goaltending they need, etc., that they can hold their own against the top teams in the Western Conference and the top teams in the league, for that matter. And the flip side of that coin is that it's only been two nights since you delivered what I thought was another dud against another bottom-feeding team. And so
remember we went into the game on Tuesday and we're talking about if they get goal lead or if they play really well, but they just can't find a way, it's one thing. But if they lay an egg, like they don't have any more left of those.
Yeah.
Did they lay an egg?
It was close to an egg to me.
I thought they did.
Yeah. They got goalied in the last 15 seconds. But other than that, I don't think you could look at that game as a game that they really deserve to win. Did they deserve to lose? I don't know. It was one of those that could have gone either way, but when you're fighting for your playoff lives or fighting for your playoff relevance, and that's what you come up with against a team that is playing for jobs, like it's just not good enough.
Yeah.
And so, the Calgary Flames could go out tonight and you know, win 5-1 and make Jonathan Quick look like the 2022 version of Jonathan Quick. Maybe that could happen. And maybe you could even get lucky on the out-of-town scoreboard and the Boston Bruins will do their job in Winnipeg and there will be stuff to feel good about for the Flames. It's just at that point now where they've, for me anyways, they've reached that point where sort of single day things to feel good about until they become a string of a few days of things to feel good about, they're a little bit hollow.
I agree. It's been a very hollow, that was another hollow single point against Arizona. I like to give a little balance. I like to give a little bit of positivity because Rob Kerr once told me, if you're always negative, why would people want to listen?
Yeah, and it's a good point.
And so, look, am I mostly negative about the way this season has gone? Yes. Do I understand this text that comes in and says, I love this propaganda, it's hilarious? Or why do you guys keep this fake dream alive? Flames are going to miss, and at this point would be better to lose for draft position. Not for Bedard, but if the draft is as deep as they say, then any spots higher is better at this point. Like, I understand if you're a Flames fan that has already resigned themselves to how this is going to play out. Because we've seen this movie way too many times before. It's been like, okay, the Calgary Flames won, and then the sequel, and then here's the third part, and then they do another trilogy after that. Like, it's been that type of thing over the last 10 or 15 years, pretty much ever since they missed the playoffs. Really, pretty much since they went to the Stanley Cup Final in 2004 and have won a grand total of two playoff series since. That's kind of what we're talking about and why I think a lot of Flames fans are like, yeah, wake me up when there's a new ending.
Yeah, and it is absolutely understandable to be resigned to how this season most likely ends. The odds are absolutely stacked against them. Not only are they stacked against them like they were a couple weeks ago, but, you know, suddenly the Winnipeg Jets don't look like they're in free fall. I don't know that the Nashville Predators are going to go away. So now you're trying.
They've got Chicago on Thursday.
Yeah. So now
the Blackhawks just beat Boston. So who knows? But
But now you're trying to miraculously leapfrog two teams. I don't think it's happening, and yet we can't see an effort tonight from the Flames with 14 games to go that suggests they don't think it's happening.
Agreed.
And that's the difference. You know, if you're throwing things at the radio or listening to the podcast, shaking your head, saying, these guys are out of their minds, there's no chance they're making the playoffs, you're probably right. But that can't be the way that Elias Lindholm and Jacob Markstrom and Tyler Toffoli and Jonathan Huberdeau look at it. Because if you're talking about a team that's pulling shoot with 14 games to go, that would be alarming in a completely other way.
Yep, 100%. And it's the big challenge for a team that is in the spot that they're in right now with the expectations they had. And not the expectations that you and I had for them or you listening had for them. It's the expectations they internally had on themselves. And I keep going back to the things that we were hearing from them during training camp and the buzz that they felt around the team going into the season. And yeah, they lost Johnny, and yeah, Matthew is no longer there, but these guys they brought in, Nazem Kadri is going to get his Stanley Cup ring on opening night, and Jonathan Huberdeau and Mackenzie Weegar have just signed these long-term deals, and they might be better than we were last year.
They won their season opener. Everything was changing.
And they went from that and built the best six-game start in franchise history and have been a very mid-team since.
Yeah. Mid's the right word for it. And I think the most frustrating thing internally, and I'm sure externally for fans as well, is that, you know, we were talking the other night. That's what, game 68?
68.
And they're talking about playing a full 60 minutes. Game 68.
Yep.
Full 60. You can't. You can't be there right now.
Yeah, when Michael Backlund said it's getting old, I think Flames fans are like, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
2 months ago it was old.
Absolutely.
Read you a few texts at 960-960. This says 25.1% chance for the Flames to make it. So how about less winning and more losing? Just kidding. They'll miss the playoffs by 1 point and pick 16th. Same old Flames. Yeah, I mean, I don't think anybody would be surprised if they stay close, and get eliminated in game 79 or game 80. I don't think anybody will be surprised by that.
Can I interject, though?
Yeah.
And I understand the, you know, potential excitement about getting a better pick in what we know is a deep draft, but wouldn't it be fun if that game against Winnipeg and that game against Nashville in April still meant something? Yeah. You can cheer for that, too. Now, will the deck still be stacked against them? I'm sure it will at that point, but wouldn't it be fun to go to the Saddle Dome? Wouldn't it be fun to tune in to that game from Winnipeg and have a lot riding on it?
It makes it a whole lot more fun to be a fan, and I understand why if you're resigned to what the script is going to be. I fully get why you're there. And yet, it sure would be nice if they proved us all wrong. Because I won't lie, I'm pretty much there. I'm very much of the opinion that, yeah, that's probably the way it's going to go. The odds are not in their favor. The math sucks.
They haven't won three in a row since before we did our Christmas shopping.
Yeah.
Unless you're really on top of things.
Definitely before I did it. I don't even know if I finished it this year.
They might not have won back to back since you finished your Christmas shopping.
Good point. I still think I have a few gifts that I got to get some people. It's just
mine is one actually. I didn't want to mention it. I'm sorry. I shouldn't have said that.
I got some peanut butter whiskey coming for you. that's more of a Vickers Eric Francis joke, but you got the joke. So, Pat, with so many fans wanting them to lose to increase draft position. I assume the post-game call-ins are cheerful after the losses and somber after the wins. Not necessarily. I don't think that's the way it's gone. This is from Jim in Cranston. Flames are the most predictable team in the league. Coleman, Mangiapane, and Dubé and others will make Quick look like an all-star goalie with plenty of shots to the gut. This says, what did Darryl do after that 5-1 start? He changed up the lines for no apparent reasons. That is true. And that still remains one of the big mysteries of the season.
That, you know, that's a terrific segue because I've been working on my lines for tonight.
Well, what do we, okay. So we talked a lot on Wednesday's show about changing them up. I'm very much of the opinion that the biggest thing they got to do, it's Pat and Wes, by the way. This is Flames Talk on Sportsnet 960 and wherever you get your podcasts. I'm very much of the opinion splitting up Huberdeau and Kadri is the number one thing that you've got to do. And by doing that, you're basically going to put all four lines into the blender. We don't know what they're going to look like for Thursday in Vegas. It sounded like at practice they were optional Thursday morning. Wednesday at practice, it sounded like things were in the blender, but nothing that was static. So we don't know what they're going to look like for the game against the Golden Knights. Warm-up's going to be really interesting. I just think it's time to split apart Huberdeau and Kadri because I see next to nothing there between those two guys.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. I think the time has come to see if Jonathan Huberdeau especially can establish some better chemistry with someone else because I've seen enough of that duo and you can always go back to it, but I've seen enough to just wonder if it works.
Kind of where I'm at because there've been some decent games. But you don't. Who's got the most chemistry this year in terms of duos or lines? Probably the Backlund line, and maybe Lindholm to Foley. Those are the two that you would point to and say there's some good chemistry. I haven't seen anything like that from Huberdeau and Kadri as of yet.
Okay, so hand me the whiteboard. I've been working on this.
Yeah. Okay. What do you got?
I've been working on these. These are my lines for tonight. Daryl, let me know what you think. Line one.
Okay.
Huberdeau on the left.
Yeah.
Backlund at center. Toffoli on the right.
Okay.
Line two.
I'm texting this to Daryl as we speak.
Let me know if you hear back.
Yeah, I will.
Mangiapane on the left.
Yeah.
Lindholm at center.
Okay.
Dubé on the right.
Okay.
I call this next line the I'm not sure you should be playing. / I'm disappointed in you. / sorry about this Blake line.
Okay.
Nick Ritchie on the left.
Uh-huh.
Nazem Kadri, who was not at his best the other night in Arizona at center. Blake Coleman on the right.
Okay. I don't mind that at all.
And it's not, I think sometimes the fourth line criticism gets overblown. So I don't have Milan Lucic and Trevor Lewis in my lineup tonight. Not necessarily as an indictment of them, but my fourth line, Jacob Pelche on the left, Adam Ruzicka at center, Walker Duehr on right.
Yep, I like him. Let's do it. I haven't heard back from Daryl yet, but I'm all in on those.
I'm not sure, admittedly, about the third line. I don't know that that's where I'd want Nazem Kadri playing long term. I certainly don't want that fourth line getting the minutes of a fourth line. I don't want Jacob Pelche playing 12 minutes. I still think he's been a bright spot. I'd be fascinated at some point to see him with Coleman because they play such a similar game to me where, you know, those are two guys that you almost wish would try to make more plays that seem to defer to cycling the puck back into the corner, but makes them really responsible players. Anyway, now I'm just off on another side tangent, but that's my lineup tonight, and I'm sure you're not going to see it, but there it is.
No, Daryl says no. No.
Oh, did he mention why he didn't like it?
He just gave me the poop emoji, and that's all. The only thing that I have trouble justifying having Nick Ritchie in the lineup right now. I have seen zero from him after his first, I don't know, 8 or 9 shifts. It's been nothing.
Yeah, that's fair. And I think if I was not putting him, like, I'm not putting him on the fourth line. And Trevor Lewis, especially to me, is a guy who hasn't done anything to deserve coming out of the lineup. And yet you've got a bunch of other guys who can penalty kill, which is what keeps him in. He's done everything you've asked from him on the fourth line. I'm not permanently taking him out, but when I wanted to fiddle with those young guys, with Pelche, Ruzicka, and Walker Duehr on a line, then it made sense to give Nick Ritchie a shot alongside some guys who have some talent.
So I do think we're going to see something different. We'll see how close those are. I hope you get all four of them.
No chance.
Probably not, but I hope you do.
If we,
and by the way,
if we see pregame warm up, just send me the poop emoji if he rolls with him, okay?
Okay, I will do just that.
I appreciate that.
I just think if we're, like, at this point, you could give me any different, you could come up with, I don't know what the different permutations are and how many different combinations you could come up with that many guys, but you could basically throw anything at me and I'd be like, yeah, go for it.
Yeah. And
there's very little that I'd be like, no, even when somebody suggested moving Lindholm to the right and loading up the top line, I'm like, every other time prior to the last week or so, I would be like, no, what would you do that for? I'm like, you know what? They got to do something.
Yeah.
There's nothing to lose and a spark to gain. And if you don't gain the spark, well, it can't be worse than what we've seen for the first 68 games in terms of meaningful chemistry and meaningful connection between these guys.
And I think in Lindholm to Foley as a duo, for sure, and I might even throw Dubé, you know, in that mix, you have a line, you know, you can fall back on that.
Same with Backlund.
Same with that Backlund line, right? I've said numerous times I'd like to see some more production, especially out of Mangiapane, but yeah, you know, you can go back to that. So I'm not saying throw them in the blender for the rest of the season, but I would mix up those pairs. I would, and I'm not saying defensive pairs, just the pairs that you could build your forward lines around. I'd mix those up and I'd mix up the lines. Yep. And I think it's time to see something different. Hey, what? Maybe you walk out of Las Vegas with a win.
It would be a nice story. It would definitely give a little bit more positivity going into the final 13 games.
Yeah.
Somebody, by the way, agrees 100% that all three lines, he's got three of the exact same lines, with his fourth line being the only different one. So somebody else is completely on board with you.
And can I just, like, for the record,
yeah,
my mom is golfing in Arizona today, so that's not her texting in to agree. So that's a second person.
She could get it easily on the golf course, whether she's listening on podcast or listening live on, like, TuneIn Radio or the Canada Radio Player Canada app.
Okay.
There you go.
Fair enough.
I got it. She could get it.
What happened to positive, Pat? Is it not possible that two people are agreeing with my lines?
You know what? It is possible. Probable, no. But possible, yes. By the way, part of why I think it's so important to be having this conversation is because I think Matt Coronato is going to factor in. And so I think you need to juggle him up so you can get a better idea as to where Coronato might fit in, because I think he's going to want to play. I think he's going to want to get into the lineup, and you're definitely going to have to burn the first year of his deal for him to sign, and he's probably going to want to play before he ends up signing. So where do you put Matt Coronato? Not in a fourth line. So if all of a sudden some line changes are able to open the door for Coronato, who I think, and you've got a story coming out on him as well. I think we all believe that it's trending in the direction that he's going to sign. I think the Flames have been very positive, both publicly and behind closed doors, that it's going to happen. Matt has been as forthright as he can be in his situation that he would like to sign. So that also is kind of in the back of my mind as we talk about these different line combinations they could try out.
Yeah, and I chatted with Matt Coronato a couple days ago, and listen, these, and I understand it as the person asking the question, he can't say much about his future, and he wants to win a national title at Harvard, and he thinks they have a legitimate shot to do it, and those that I've talked to who follow NCAA hockey more closely think they absolutely do. They're the sixth-ranked team in the country right now. So here's the timeline update quickly. They play in their conference championship this weekend in Lake Placid. Cornell tomorrow. Cornell-Harvard in the semifinal. Now, sort of regardless of what happens, they're going to get an invite to the NCAA tournament.
Yeah.
Regionals are next weekend. If they go to the Frozen Four, that's April 6th and 8th, or April 6th to 8th in Tampa. So there's your timeline on Coronado, but you're absolutely right.
That means that the latest that he could be available would be for their final few games.
Yeah, final couple maybe. Yeah. And to your point, this is what you have to do to get college guys signed at the end of the season. They want to burn a year of their entry-level deal. It's not unique to Matt Coronado. It's not unique to guys who are playing at Harvard. It's what happens now with NCAA free agents. They want to get to those years that they can make more than the minimum faster. This is one way to do it. But if you get Matt Coronato here, and all indications are there's a ton of positivity, as you said, on both sides, if you get him here, you're absolutely going to want to put him in and find out what he can do. And more than that, more than finding out what he can do, you're going to want to show him what the NHL is. If Matt Coronato has a couple of games that he can then take into the summer and go, okay, now I know what it takes to play in the NHL. Now I know what I have to get better at. Now I know what my strength, which I've worked really hard on, looks like at the NHL level. Now I have so much more understanding that you don't get just from watching games on TV or attending development camp. That can't help but benefit Matt Coronato. And if he could pull a Johnny Gaudreau and score in his first game and take some confidence into the summer that, hey, I can do this, that'd be great too.
I think all signs are positive that it's going to happen. Now, until it's done, as a couple of techs says, that says, I hope he signs, Pat, but the way the last 12 months have gone for Flames fans, I won't get my hopes up until it's done, and I understand that. This says, hey, Pat, remember Johnny Gaudreau also wanted to sign in Calgary? And I said, well, he did sign in Calgary two times, in fact. He signed his entry-level deal out of college and then signed his second deal. It was not third time's a charm. I do remember that. And this says, I used to babysit Wes and Cocker, and I think his lines are solid. So there's a third person. There is a third person. And yes, he could play in the American League. That is an option, but I'm not sure it's an option that the Coronado camp is all that interested in. Usually in these circumstances, you want to start in the NHL, get your NHL money, as much of it as you can.
Yeah.
And then the next year you're on a two-way deal. So the team has the option to do what they want. But usually one of the conditions or one of the kind of deals of signing and coming out early is that you finish the year in the NHL. That is my guess as to how this plays out.
Yeah. You would love to be able to work. It would be an ATO essentially. That he would join the Wranglers for a Calder Cup push, but that's just not, it doesn't, in order to do that, you'd be signing a deal that didn't kick in till next year. You're not burning a year of the deal. It's just,
exactly.
It's probably not realistic. I think if you want Matt Coronato signed, and I don't get the sense that Matt Coronato is saying to, they can't have these discussions technically. And so, I don't want to paint Matt Coronato like he's going to play hardball on it, but this is what you do to get an NCAA free agent signed these days. You burn that first year of the deal, and I'm sure that's what the Coronado camp is going to be asking for.
That is something to keep an eye on as we move forward. Keep an eye on coming out. Friday that it's coming out?
It should be on the Post Media websites already, actually.
Okay, so it's already up at the Post Media websites, the latest with Matt Coronato and Wes Gilbertson. Wes, Pat, we're underway this hour of Flames Talk. The Soundtrack Music Festival is coming to Edmonton on Friday, June 16th, and Saturday, June 17th. It'll be at Kinsmen Park in Edmonton. It is a great lineup for those of us in the millennial age range. Nelly, Third Eye Blind, T.I., Ashanti, Everclear, and more, all in Edmonton for the weekend of June 16th and 17th. Tickets on sale now. If you're interested, go to soundtrackmusicfestival.ca. One more time, soundtrackmusicfestival.ca.
Hey, it's Haley Salvian from The Athletic. For a look at the latest on your Calgary Flames and NHL news, go click and subscribe to the Hockey Central 960 podcast. While you're there, please rate and review the show.
Flames Talk is on the air and streaming on the Sportsnet mobile app. Sportsnet 960 The Fan, Calgary.
All right, time for our Daily Flames Roundtable on a Thursday, brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. Upgrade your current Mercedes-Benz to a 2022 model with a 2% additional reduction. Drive over to Mercedes-Benz Country Hills minutes from the Calgary Airport. Pat, Wes Gilbertson, and now the voice of the Flames, Derek Wills, joins us to complete our roundtable. Gents, Wes and I talked about this a little earlier, just the idea of, hey, you know, you go into Vegas, you beat the Golden Knights, all of a sudden you're 4-1-1 in your last six, and maybe, Wes didn't buy it as much, and I understand, but maybe that loss point against Arizona doesn't feel quite as much of a loss point. But how big could a win in Vegas be? How big could a first ever victory at T-Mobile Arena be?
Wes, you're not buying what Pat's selling?
Little overpriced. The optimism was a little out of my price range today.
You're looking for a Black Friday deal, are you?
Yeah.
I mean, it would be a big win, guys. They've never won in that building. They came close last time. At least they picked up their first point at T-Mobile Arena since the Golden Knights came into the league, but didn't get two in a game they could have, maybe even should have got two in, which has been one of the stories of their season. It would be big from a standings perspective, potentially, because you're 5 points behind the Jets for the second wild card spot in the Western Conference, and they're at home to play the best team in the league, a Bruins team that has lost two in a row, and that hasn't happened very often. So I'm guessing they're going to be pretty hungry tonight. So you've got a chance to get to within 3 points of the second wild card spot in the Western Conference with a win tonight. And yeah, you'd be beating the top team in your division and the top team in your conference. But, you know, with that said, there have been a bunch of wins that I thought could potentially be springboards for the Flames this season. And in their next game, they didn't jump off that springboard. They fell off of it. And I think you can look at the last two games. You know, a really impressive 5-1 victory over the Senators on Sunday, and then a 4-3 overtime loss to the lowly Coyotes on Tuesday. So there have just been too many occasions this season where the Flames have had a big win against a good team and then responded to that with a bad loss against a not-so-good team. So you take it one game at a time, and you try to take the 2 points away from the Golden Knights tonight. That's, I think, the first priority. But you know, whether or not they could build on a big win, they haven't done a very good job of that so far this season. Obviously, they're going to have to do a better job of it moving forward if they want to get back to the playoffs again.
I still have flashbacks every time I walk into Honda Center in Anaheim of years and years of asking the Flames about never being able to get 2 points in that building. And punctuated typically at the end of the night by the fans chanting, "You can't win here." It's not quite there for the Flames at T-Mobile in Vegas, but it's getting close. Like, we're talking about a team that has been in the league for 6 seasons now, and they're in your division. Granted, one of those seasons you weren't crossing the border, so let's say you've been playing against them for 5 seasons, but still, to not have a win in Vegas is bordering on ridiculous. And I think that's what you could look at as important for the Flames tonight. Is it would sure be nice when you go there in November or December or February of next year, yeah, to finally have that behind you. I don't know if they still have the Major League doll.
Oh, Jobu.
Jobu.
Glenn Godson style.
Desperate times call for desperate measures, boys.
I just think, to regardless of what it means in the wild card race, and we know now that they're going to need a string of positive results to really stay in that mix. But I just think to finally have a win in Vegas, a place that you've lost 8 in a row, just have a point in one of those, that you've been outscored 34-11, which is a good indication of how close some of those games have been. I just think to finally have a win there, even if you can't build on that confidence for months, would be a step in the right direction.
Yeah, you know, that's a good way of putting it, because I don't know if they are, this year's team is going to at any point be able to build on stuff like this, because they've really not been able to through almost 85% of the season so far. But I do think, big picture-wise, if we could no longer have to talk about the lack of wins in Vegas, it would be good for us, selfishly, and also probably good for them, just so they don't have to hear about it every single time they go in there, and it doesn't turn into the runaway monster like it was in Anaheim for the better part of 15 years or whatever it ended up turning out to be. So I think that's big. Yeah, and it could be big. I mean, again, 4-1-1 is the type of pace this team is going to have to play at if they're going to want to get to where they want to go. You know, all the projections of they got 14 to go, they probably need to win like 11 of their final 14 or the equivalent of getting 22 points in their final 14. Well, 4-1-1 is pretty close to that. All of a sudden, if it's 3-2-1, that now you're not quite having the same conversation. So just in that respect, and being able to pick up a win over a good team, and we know they've played well against good teams for the most part this season, I think it could be a small positive. How's that?
Glass half full guy here. You want to hear a few reasons why I think tonight could be the night for the Flames at T-Mobile Arena?
Sure.
What do they say about the first game at home following a long road trip?
Sometimes it can be difficult.
Yeah, quite often, right? Golden Knights are coming home following a five-game road trip where they won the final four games. So that's one reason. Number two, they're banged up right now. I don't know what you would call Jonathan Quick. I mean, he's the number one goaltender right now, but they're without arguably their top three guys, or at least the three guys who were their top three guys before they acquired Jonathan Quick. Aiden Hill's out. Logan Thompson's out. Laurent Brossoit's out. So you're down three of your top four goaltenders, not knowing how to number those guys. Nick Waugh's out. William Carrier's out. Keegan Kolesar's out. And, of course, Mark Stone, who's their best player, is out. So they're banged up right now. So there's reason number two. Reason number three, I think the Flames took a step in the right direction last time they were at T-Mobile Arena. That's the best game they've played in that building. And they picked up a point. They didn't get two, but one's better than none. So there's three reasons why tonight could finally be the night. And I'll give you a fourth reason, a bonus reason. The Flames, when they play a bad game, and I don't think they played a very good game on Tuesday night in Tempe, Arizona, when they lost 4-3 in overtime to the Coyotes, they tend to respond with a good game, just like they tend to respond to a good game with a not-so-good game. So I do think they're going to bounce back, and I do think they're going to be better against the Golden Knights tonight, which should give them a chance to win the hockey game. But the one thing about that building, and it's been a while since I've been there, no lead is really safe. And the Flames haven't had the lead for very long in the right games in that building. I think the longest lead they had was in their last game, correct, Pat?
Yes.
Yeah,
sure. Yeah, more than about 2 minutes, just to put that in perspective. The crowd there is crazy. And, you know, when I look at the long losing streak at Honda Center in Anaheim and compare it to the not as long losing streak at T-Mobile Arena in Las Vegas, the thing about going in Anaheim, you are going against one of the best teams in the league, a perennial Stanley Cup contender in the Ducks. And that's, in my opinion at least, the main reason why the Flames lost so many games in a row in that building. The Golden Knights have been a really good team for the most part. Last season, they took a step back. This season, they've taken a step forward again. But the atmosphere in that building, again, in my opinion, is second to none. They have a better game tape presentation than any team in the league, which you would expect in Las Vegas. And that crowd, the way they can get behind that team and lift them up when they feel like the team needs them to do that, it's second to none, in my opinion. So, you know, the Flames are going to try to play a low-scoring, close hockey game, but you better not sit on a lead if you get one, as we saw last time around, because that's a Golden Knights team that can get you and a crowd that can certainly lift their team when their team needs it. So we'll see what happens tonight. A low-scoring game is probably a good idea for the Flames. The Golden Knights are 31-0-0 when they score four or more, so you better not let them get to four.
Make this a quick second topic. I don't know how much. We don't have to. It's just I don't know how much we really can. It's just it's more. I'm having a hard time wrapping my head around it. It's Derek, Wes, and Pat with you on the Daily Flames Roundtable. But just, guys, how strange is it that Jonathan Quick, A, is in Vegas, B, no longer playing for the LA Kings, and C, is winning games and is currently unbeaten as a member of the Vegas Golden Knights? I am having a hard time with this one.
Yeah, it's going to be strange to call a game involving Jonathan Quick, not involving the Los Angeles Kings. Spent parts of 16 seasons with that organization, gets traded unexpectedly to the Blue Jackets with a conditional first-round pick in 23 and a third-round pick in 24 for Vladislav Gavrikov and Jonas Korpisalo back on March 1st. And then he gets flipped to the Golden Knights for Michael Hutchinson and a seventh-round pick in 25 on March 2nd. And we know how that trade went over in the Kings dressing room. Now, I think as a team, they've responded pretty well to it. And maybe they're, you know, playing for him in a certain way. But I don't think Quick was expecting it. I don't think the Kings were expecting it. But in hindsight, maybe the best thing that could have happened to Jonathan Quick, because, you know, he wasn't having a very good season there. 11-13-4, 3.50 goals against average, and an .876 save percentage in 31 games. And now with his new team, the Golden Knights, a perfect 4-0-0 with a shutout, 2.22 goals against average, and a .930 save percentage in 4 games. So he's been brilliant since joining the team. And we know how fiery Jonathan Quick has always been. And guys, I've got to think that him unexpectedly getting traded away from an organization that he spent 16 seasons with and won 2 Stanley Cups with has been incredible motivation for him to take his game to another level. And you go from a good Kings team, they're sitting second in the Pacific Division, to an even better Golden Knights team, where the biggest question mark, and I guess you could say this about the Kings as well, but the biggest question mark, in my opinion, is their goaltending. And so far, he's looked like a guy who could potentially carry them to and then maybe pretty deep into the Stanley Cup playoffs. So, you know, he's been a lot of fun to watch, a hard guy to play against. He's been really good against the Flames in his career. And he just looks like he's rejuvenated, maybe mad at the Kings for trading him, especially the way that they did, and excited to be with a new team for the first time in his NHL, the first time in his professional career. And it's a good Golden Knights team. So it's going to be strange to see him in the gold jerseys of the Golden Knights tonight. But I'm happy for him. He's been such a great player in this league for such a long time. It's good to see him playing at a high level again.
I don't remember all the injury specifics, and I'm not sure the Golden Knights have been especially forthcoming with them, but I wonder how many goaltending stalls they're going to need in that locker room for the playoffs.
And no kidding. They there's a lot of goalies there. Yeah. All of a sudden. And a lot of them that they say are going to be healthy come playoff time.
Yeah, that's going to be... Tonight's going to be weird, but walking into a locker room in the playoffs and seeing 5 guys in pads, that'd be weird too.
It's really strange. I mean, I give the guy credit. He's stepped in there. Those numbers you rattled off, nowhere close to the numbers that he had in Los Angeles when he was like hovering around an 870 save percentage or whatever. He was
876.
876. He was dreadful. It looked like the guy was done, and then he gets a new lease on life with a very good Vegas team. It's look, I get what the Kings did. They weren't getting it from the guys that they needed, and so they needed to go out and upgrade their goaltending. It was Peterson and Quick to start, and now it's Copley and Corpusalo as they head into the playoffs. So I get why the Kings did it, but it is quite strange to see him doing what he's doing in Vegas. I give him credit. I wasn't expecting it, so good on him.
Well, the way I look at it, the Flames are due for their first win at T-Mobile Arena, and Jonathan Quick is due for his first loss as a member of the Golden Knights. So we'll see if those things happen tonight.
A good, positive way to spin it. I like it.
Glass half full, guy.
Talk to you soon. Thanks, pal.
All right, we'll see you soon, guys.
He's Derek Wills. He's Wes Gilbertson. I'm Pat Steinberg. There's your Daily Flames Roundtable on a Thursday, brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. Upgrade your current Mercedes-Benz to a 2022 model with a 2% additional reduction. Drive over to Mercedes-Benz Country Hills, minutes from the Calgary Airport. How many times has Jonathan Quick broken his stick in a game? Shut up, Siri. How many times has Jonathan Quick broken... Look, I am not verbally abusive very often, but when it comes... I try to make it never, but when it comes to Siri, oh boy, that is a different story. I want to say like at least on 4 occasions he has smashed his stick after a goal against the Flames. He very quickly turned into one of the least favored opposing players on other teams for Flames fans. Like he got into like Kessler Bieksa territory for a little while there.
Yeah, and he runs so hot. I enjoy watching him, and I think it's pretty cool what he's doing right now. I'm not sure I necessarily see him maintaining it. Maybe the Flames can poke a couple holes in that balloon tonight.
Be good. They could definitely use it for themselves.
And, Pat, would you go easy on Siri, please?
I'm sorry. Siri, I'm very sorry. I feel bad now. Being verbally abusive to your watch or anybody else is always wrong. That part is serious. It's time to wrap things up on your Flames Talk Best Bets, and on this hour with your Flames Talk Best Bets. Best Bets brought to you by Bodog.net. Find your next favorite game at Bodog.net. Hashtag make a play. Free play only. 18 plus. play responsibly. Well, we only had the one best bet on Wednesday, and it did hit. We got Zach Parise, and he went over 1.5 shots in New York's win over the Islanders. So we're up to 4-2 on the week. Got 3 for you on Thursday. See how we do. I'm going to go William Karlsson over 0.5 for the Golden Knights versus Calgary. He's got 22 points in 20 career games against the Flames. So we'll go Karlsson over 0.5. I've also got LA's Trevor Moore over 2.5 shots as the Kings take on Columbus. And I've got Nashville's Roman Josi over 3.5 shots as they take on Chicago. So Karlsson over 0.5, Moore over 2.5 shots, and Josi over 3.5 shots is what we're looking at for this Thursday.
I feel like 6-3 going into Friday.
I'd be all right with 6-3.
As you should be.
As long as we can keep this roll going.
Clinch a winning record.
Got 5 straight weeks of over 500 on the best bets. We're in the money. That's all that matters.
Can't argue with that.
Enjoy the game, Wes.
Yeah, you as well.
He's Wes Gilbertson of Post Media. Our producers, Cam and Taylor. I'm Pat. That'll wrap us up this hour, and that'll do it for our Flames Talk Best Bets as well. Brought to you by Bodog.net. Find your next favorite game at Bodog.net. #MakeAPlay. Free play only. 18+. Play responsibly.